Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
What happens when you lock 18 coworkers in an office for 1 week to compete for $250,000 of cash? This is Surviving Barstool Season 5, presented by Rumble Premium. Each episode released 3 hours early, so get it ad-free before anyone else, only when you join Rumble Premium. Surviving Barstool premieres Sunday, August 9th at 5 p.m. on Rumble Premium, and everywhere else at 8 p.m.
To infinity and beyond!
The Lord tells me he can get me out of this mess, but he's pretty sure you're fucked.
That is why you fail.
You can't handle the truth!
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe fuck yourself.
Say hello to my little friend!
You'll shoot your eye out, kid.
Say what again? Say what again? I dare you! I double dare you, motherfucker! Say what one more goddamn time!
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
Roads? Where we're going, we don't need roads.
Are you not entertained? Are you not?
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Podcast, episode 16, but season 2, episode 1? Are we going to do that? Are we going to do seasons? Let's make the decision right now. Are we going to do seasons, or are we just going to just go right along with episode 16?
I don't like the season thing, because we've only done like one quarter of a year of podcasting. So was that like our pilot season, even though we haven't been picked up by anybody?
That was. That was
hard, like, it's hard to say.
Yeah, like the first Seinfeld episode where like they're in the wrong apartment and everything, and it's all really weird. Like that's what that was. We're gonna get like the nice apartment now, and Elaine's gonna be a main character.
Just do like this series 2 or something like that, the way the Brits do it.
Yeah, that always messes me up when I'm like on Wikipedia and I'm looking at like what's a British show I enjoy? The Office.
Sherlock.
Office series 2. Sherlock. Like two British shows I've watched. It's like series 2. I'm like, God, I didn't know they made another one.
So off the top, follow us on Twitter at Lights Camera Podcast. That's not the Twitter handle, at Lights Camera Pod. That's what it is. We have our Reddit. Reddit is Lights Camera Podcast. We're gonna have our website relaunch soon. I think by Sunday, I think we're gonna do a little Golden Globes piece, little predictions, who should win, who should have won type thing. And then we do have some big things coming up. Nothing we can talk about. We do have some big things, and we will talk about our upcoming schedule here at the end of our news segment, and we'll just talk about some of the movies we're going to have and tease some guests, some we can reveal, some we can't quite yet. But let me get to one thing really quick. Last week was, or well, 2 weeks ago was the Star Wars episode, and it was the first episode that we had where people were, I think, upset with how we reviewed some things. Some people were very team Last Jedi, and some people weren't. So this is more of a, I guess, a public service announcement, just a reminder that you don't always have to agree with us.
We're not talking about Star Wars anymore until the Solo trailer drops.
And then after that, we won't talk about it until the movie comes out. So again, reminder, if you don't agree with us, it's perfectly fine. You know, that's what makes us fun. That's why movies are fun. You don't always have to agree. And guess what? The three of us are not going to agree in a little bit on a movie. So we'll get into that. We're reviewing The Greatest Showman and Jumanji today. We did not see Pitch Perfect 3 yet. I do apologize if you're an Aka fan or whatever they call themselves. I'm sorry. We did not see it. So we are not reviewing it this week.
Aka, excuse me?
Did you have that written down?
He did. He has a prompter. No. Drill has a prompter in front of his computer.
Remember when we talked about writing down jokes to say on podcasts? It just doesn't work.
So let's get into some news. A lot of news over the last few weeks, but we're not going to get to some things that are too old because, guys, you've read them and we've tweeted about them on our Twitter as well. But we'll get into some newer stuff. First news topic of the day, Bright, the Netflix movie, which really burned up the charts. People were talking about it. People watched it. Some people hated it. There were some reviews that said it was the worst movie of the year. Well, we all liked it for the most part. You know, we didn't really hate Bright, but the sequel is set and both Will Smith and Joel Edgerton, aka Orc Cop, are going to be back for the sequel.
Jacoby.
Jacoby.
What was his first name? Like Bill Jacoby.
Yeah, it was like, no, Nick. I think it was Nick. Yeah, Nick Jacoby.
Yeah, that's right.
But I think the question is here, are we buttering to the right sequel? Because Trill, you gave it a 70. I gave it a 62. Kenjack, you gave it a 74. It was officially buttered by the podcast. It was fine. It was a good time. It's not great. It has its issues, but I'm on board, I guess, for a sequel because I don't have to pay. It's Netflix, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not sure I'd go see it. I think the Netflix angle is why it's enjoyable.
I ended up liking the concept a lot more than I thought I would when it was first announced. It was like Will Smith is in a movie with he's a buddy cop with an orc. I'm like, what? And watching it, I really dug it. I did. It wasn't a great movie, but like you're saying, for to be included with a Netflix subscription, it was perfectly competent, and there were parts of it that I really did enjoy. I really liked. I liked the Bastille song, "World Gone Mad," that was included in that. That was pretty neat. But other than that, yeah, I'm buttering for the sequel. I mean, give me more Netflix movies. They don't have to be great, but how much do we pay? $9.99? I forget how much it is a month. Yeah. It's fine. Just watch it 2 hours. It gives you something to talk about on the internet. What more could you want?
I agree. $9.99 is like half of what we pay for a ticket to AMC here in the city, Jeff.
That's true.
And we get not only a full original movie for it, but all the other movies they offer. So, I mean, that's pretty – I'm not complaining about it.
I did think that Will Smith was like one of the weaker parts of the movie, though.
Yeah.
Didn't you guys feel that? Like, I don't know. Like, he just didn't seem to do – or he wasn't as dynamic as we're used to, like, seeing Will Smith. And yeah. Maybe that's on me because his last couple movies haven't been all that great.
Well, I don't think there was any particular standout acting performance. I just think the movie on a whole was decent. And that's what I don't understand why people were so up in arms about it, saying it's possibly the worst movie of all time. It's good. It's a solid watch. And there's cool action. The Bastille song on during the shooting scene was maybe one of the most disturbing.
When the world's gone so mad.
It was fucking great. And I'm buttered up for the Bright sequel. What's it going to be called, though? Is it Always Look on the Bright Side of Life or Brighter?
Brighter? Yeah.
I hardly even know her. Fought the story, Mark.
That was the second Monty Python references episode, by the way.
This is. That's number two.
Always Look on the Brighter Side of Life. Okay, so Bright... Yeah, butter. It doesn't require much effort, and I think that's a big reason why some people liked it. And again, we'll get into bad movies and defining the word bad and what is a bad or terrible movie. Just say it. Just say Greatest Showman, because I know you just...
Mediocre means bad, motherfucker.
No, it doesn't.
What are you changing language? You can't just change language on a podcast.
All right.
Mediocre means mediocre. It's meaning.
Hold it. Put a lid on it. We're saving all this anger for later.
Oh, see, Ken Jack thought he might have Trill on this, but now he definitely doesn't.
Mediocre is bad. No!
So the bad... What's a bad movie thing really just... grinds my gear sometimes, but the thing that makes it even worse for me is when someone says it's the worst movie of the year. Yeah. Bright was not the worst movie of the year. I think that's one of the few things that you can objectively say about a thing. Like, no, we say all the time, no one's ever right or wrong about movies, except if you don't like La La Land. But I'm also adding in there, except if you think something is terrible that is objectively not the worst movie of the year. Like, it's not. Like, you haven't seen a lot of movies if you think that's the worst movie of the year. I say that, and if it sounds snobby, it is what it is. But there are so many bad. Leatherface, The Bye Bye Man. We're going to break them all down with Brunch Podcast, DJ, and People Ekberg next week. So Tappy Death Day. So we're going to talk about worst movies of the year next week. But Bright was, come on. But that was part of the reason why it got, I think, so much hype online. Obviously, it was marketed and promoted very well. I'm out here in California. There's Bright billboards everywhere. And I think there were some in New York as well. But them calling it the worst movie of the year made it trend. And I think a lot of people liked it and were like, okay, come on. That's not the worst movie of the year. This was not something I originally thought we'd talk about. And I guess we're going to have to see it and review it at some point. But the trailer for Slender Man came out today to, I think, a lot of disinterest or criticism. It is not based off of the real life Slender Man stabbings, which are really messed. That whole story is really messed up.
The fact that that's a real sentence is just disturbing.
The whole story, it's again, we're not going to get into it. We're not like a serial podcast. We're not going to get into the news, but Slender Man is a messed up story, but they made a movie based off the internet meme, Slender Man. And the trailer came out today, and it's, I think the first reaction Ken Jack and I had was, it's kind of gross. Trill, you kind of just watched it and stopped just watching it after, because it didn't get any reaction out of you. It's dumb.
It's dumb looking. Paint by numbers horror movie with like creepy children. You know? Like, come on, give it a rest, guys.
No, people aren't very happy about this. They say, you know, popularizing a tragedy. True. And someone says proof that something shouldn't leave the internet. True. I'm not into this at all.
Can you imagine a movie popularizing something and people that are really fucked up and exploiting it for money? Who could possibly do that? And who could possibly rate that movie really high? Who's to say? We might find out later.
Ken Jack doesn't know what mediocre or really high means, apparently. We'll continue.
High enough. No, higher than it deserves.
I was thinking, just going back to like the fact that we've had 3 9/11 movies in the last 15 years.
Yes.
I mean, I think we're beyond the point where we're not popularizing tragedies here with our cinema. So it's not like that, you know, that was a tragedy for sure. But the movie just looks dumb. It looks stupid. They had like this trailer with like stuff injecting into other stuff spliced in with clips of like creepiness. Kind of like a Stranger Things knockoff almost in some respects. I just didn't catch my interest. I don't know if we're gonna see this. We probably
think it goes beyond. Yeah, we're gonna definitely see it. It comes out in May. We'll see when we do. We will see it. We'll review it. I think that could be a YouTube review come the summer. But for me, I think it's not as much about popularizing the tragedy, because I don't love the fact they make 9/11 movies, but they make them and it is what it is. But I think it's a really like psychological thing with these stabbings and like what happened. It doesn't seem like it's a thing that you should make very mainstream and popular, because again, they're not really making a movie about the story. They're making a movie about the meme, which led to the story that was bad. If that makes sense. I'm not on board with this. I think this is a really shit idea.
It's kind of weird because like horror movies in general, like if you think you want to make one, like the graph is like yes or no. And if the answer is like yes, and the next following tree is no, you actually don't, because horror movies suck. And then if the subsequent tree is...
What the fuck
is
are you talking about?
Is it about a popular meme or a popular meme that ended up leading to something?
There you go. You got me now.
And it's still an absolute fucking no. So it's just like horror movies suck. Why would you make a horror movie that's going to be problematic nonetheless? Like I don't get it.
The movie will probably do well with its intended audience, which are like 16 or 17 year olds who like have to drive themselves to the theater with no friends in their car because they still have their like permit. You know, like that's the audience for these types of movies. It'll probably do okay. The budget's like $6. They probably filmed it like behind an Aldi somewhere in Ohio.
It looks to me, it doesn't look good, like budget wise.
No, they just throw a filter on it. They just throw like that blue gray filter on everything, and now you got yourself a horror movie.
Do you think this is going to be part of the larger IMCU, the Internet Meme Cinematic Universe? Do you think the next one's going to be Bad Luck Brian and all that shit?
Yeah, they're going to get Michael Jordan for a second feature role, or just fucking crying into the camera for 90 minutes.
It connects to Shithead Steve. He's in the movie. People freak out about the Easter egg.
Mm-hmm. That's been talking memes.
Guys, we know our memes. Slenderman, we're not a fan. Please let us know about that trailer. We'll post a trailer too on our Twitter and get some immediate reactions. I assume most everyone who follows us is going to hate it. Moving on to another, I guess, science fiction weird type alien thing, and that's Alien itself. So Fox has, as of now, killed off the existing Alien sequels. So continuing of the Covenant, Prometheus whole storyline with Michael Fassbender and that whole crew, it's done for. So I guess my question to you is not what you're buttering to, but what should they do with Alien? Because now Disney has the rights to Alien. I mean, do they just make it a theme park ride and move on with it, or do they try to reboot it? Neil Blomkamp has said his Alien thing is done. It's over with, his idea. So there's really nowhere right now that they are looking to go. It's just those sequels are canceled. Now what do you do with Alien?
God, I don't know. It's we talked about this many episodes ago, and I think we were talking about Terminator and Alien both, and they both seem to have run their course in terms of like how can you tell the story anymore or any better than previous movies in the franchise. With Terminator, you have Terminator 2, and the original Terminator was good as well. The original Alien was phenomenal, and Alien 2 was a great action movie, and Alien 3 sucked, and everything's kind of sucked since.
Alien vs. Predator.
Ooh. Well, that's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking we got this crossover theme later in the episode. You could do a crossover with Alien to maybe get me back into it, because aliens by themselves, The only interesting thing I could think of with the aliens was based around like the Prometheus origin stories, and they completely fucked that up. So yeah. I don't know, because that was the only thing I wanted to know, where the aliens came from, and they kind of told us. Now I don't know what they're going to do. You know, if Disney has it now, it might just be a solid 90 minutes of alien movies with like 70 minutes of jokes in it.
Shirtless alien.
Actually. But did they ever have an alien go to Earth or beyond, like the Alien vs. Predator thing where they were sort of in a or whatever that was, Antarctica or something?
Alien 3 was like on a prison colony of sorts, but I can't remember. I thought it was like a spaceship.
Right? I don't know much past Alien 2.
And then I don't remember Alien 3 at all. If they did like an aliens versus humans on Earth, like a war, not like just like a thriller thing, I think that might be kind of cool. Or that like have Predators and Prometheus too.
Horrible, dude. Big war.
Sounds awesome to me.
Aliens, it sounds awful.
Hell yeah.
Well,
man,
you're getting that with Avengers. The Avengers Infinity War is basically an alien war. You see all Thanos as aliens. So.
Here's where people fuck up the alien lore. All right. Aliens from a distance should be super easy to kill with some heavy weaponry and firepower. It's when the alien gets you in close quarters that they become truly dangerous and disturbing, like in the original Alien and maybe Alien 2. So I don't know.
Tell that to Starship Troopers, man. I mean, that's basically their entire spiel.
Yeah, but I feel like Starship Troopers, the bugs in that one were like a lot less threatening than aliens.
You think so? They had like fucking things shooting stuff down from space. They had bugs on the ground with like anti-aircraft batteries in their buttholes.
Maybe you're right. I think maybe what I'm just thinking of is like for an alien movie to work, it seems like it has to be really contained in a close quarter, claustrophobic type movie. And I don't know where you can go with that, you know?
It might be kind of cool if they have maybe Predators instead versus humans, and then they do almost a Halo plot line where the Flood is the aliens. Ooh, I'm so in on this.
Who owns Terminator? How sick would it be if you had aliens versus Predators versus Terminator? So the aliens and the Predators were dropped on Earth, like Ken Jack was saying, but it's the Earth timeline that's been completely taken over by Skynet. Ooh. And they're not even going for a good movie in this one. They're just going for, hey, do you remember this? Arnold could be both the Terminator, his Terminator character, and his Predator character, who I don't know how they make that work. But look, ideas are free here.
Yeah, the last Terminator Genesis was released by Paramount, actually. And don't forget, and we're going to review this movie on August 9th, so a long ways away, there's a new movie, The Predator, and I believe it's a reboot. Shane Black is directing. Shane Black was obviously in The Predator. It's Olivia Munn's in it, Keegan-Michael Key, Sterling K. Brown, Jacob Tremblay's in it. Boo. People in that movie who are you booing?
So, can you go through that again from start to finish? I didn't like the last three, whatever that was.
Olivia Munn, Keegan-Michael Key, Sterling K. Brown, and Jacob Tremblay. Who did you boo? Mind.
I heard the whole thing, and they all suck. I don't want it. Or suck in this context. I don't want any of them in a Predator movie. I just remember Topher Grace was in the last Predator movie, so never mind. Fucking cast whoever you want.
I tried to watch the last Predator movie with Adrian Brody on a plane, and there was this grandma sitting right next to me, and the opening scene, I think, is like shooting and flying out of a plane and like a big explosion. And she opened up like her Bible app on her phone and started reading the Bible right next to me. So I shut the Predator movie off of my iPad because I think I was giving her some anxiety. So that's my lasting Predator memory.
Yeah, Predators, I believe, was the name of the movie.
It was so bad. Fucking what's his name? Lawrence Fishburne was in it too. And I just remember Topher Grace played like a Kevorkian doctor or something like that. Yeah. Kevorkian doctor. It was so bad.
Well, and Goggins was in that movie. Yeah, that was a bad movie. Right. I'm surprised there haven't been more Predator movies as I look at this. I thought there were more than what there actually is. But of course we had the crossover movies, so that, you know, that has to do with why that happened. But yeah, the Predator coming out this year, Alien. Let us know your thoughts. What would you do with Alien? Because now that Disney has it, you got to think they might do something with it and just kind of try to redo it or try to restart it in a much better way than they did with these last ones. Because I know we didn't despise Alien Covenant, but I know there are some people in their end of year reviews who hated it and said it's one of the worst movies of the year. So
they're just so sloppy. Both Prometheus and Alien Covenant just didn't feel like coherent movies to me.
Yeah.
And maybe that's just me, but it's on, you know, you can only use the alien to get the draw and get people into seats so much. And then you're just like, whoops, we forgot to make a movie.
It almost seems like Covenant wasn't a sequel of whatever it was, Prometheus.
Yeah, like they tried to get a new direction without totally forgetting what the last one was, I guess.
Yeah.
And I think the funny thing is that what is everything they tried to promote about it? Like, oh, the alien is back here. But like, what do people talk about with the first one? It's Sigourney Weaver. You know, like, let's not pretend the alien was the main part of why people liked Alien. It was Sigourney Weaver. She was fantastic. So, I don't know. That's where you get lost with movies, and I think people forget why things are... It goes back to Trill reading the letter from Sony about Spider-Man and what they could do to make Spider-Man fun. You know, like, no, that's not what makes Spider-Man fun. Spider-Man being a fun character to look at and watch and see develop on screen, that's what makes it fun, not him going to do Tough Mudder.
I think, though, if I pitch the Alien movie to Disney... I could write it, because what I would do is I'd go into that room and I'd say, okay, you got the queen alien, right? She opens up her mouth and out of her mouth comes another mouth. And then out of that mouth comes a third smaller mouth. And they'd be like, boom, that's our movie, boys.
That's a wide mouth.
Right. Write it up, Trill. Send it to Bob Iger and Disney. All right, lastly, we have our next 10 episodes planned out. We actually have every episode for the rest of the year planned out in terms of what we're reviewing. We won't get too far into it. We'll stop at the beginning of March. Next week, we have our crossover with the Brunch Podcast, DJ Bean and Pete Blackburn. Very excited for that. We're going to do worst movies of 2017 and a movie newlywed game. It's going to be a crossover pod, so it's going to be released on both platforms. Let me read off some bad movies that may be helpful for you to see. Baywatch, The Emoji Movie, Transformers The Last Night, Geostorm, 50 Shades Darker, The Nut Job 2, Nutty by Nature, Daddy's Home 2, The Mummy, The Circle, Leatherface, The Bye Bye Man, Diary of a Wimpy Kid, The Long Haul. I want to know how many people actually watch that. Boo 2, Madea Halloween, The Snowman, Wish Upon, Flatliners, Monster Trucks, Underworld, Blood Wars, Resident Evil, Rings, Arsenal, Chips, and All Eyes on Me. And there's some other ones I'm sure we'll get into, but I would focus on trying to see some of those, or at least watching reviews and reading about what the movies were, because there were some really bad movies this year. This was a fantastic year for movies, but this is also a year with some really bad ones. Not many, but a few particularly terrible movies. So we'll do that next week. All right, so after that, you'll want to see the movie The Commuter by January 18th. Robbie Fox from Barstool is going to come on and talk best movies of the year for 2017, and also review Commuter with Liam Neeson. The next week, we're going to watch Den of Thieves, which has Gerard Butler and 50 Cent in it. And we're going to talk best and worst movie theater candy with a special guest. Not revealing who that is yet. Episode 22. This will be February 1st. We're going to have football week to be determined on our movie and segment. That'll be Super Bowl week. So we'll do some football related stuff. Week after that, we're going to see Maze Runner, The Death Cure, which is trending on Twitter all the time now. So I think Logan Lerman is in that, right? Is that who that is?
That's the asshole from American Assassin. He's in Maze Runner, no?
No, not Logan Lerner. What's his name?
Dylan O'Brien.
Dylan O'Brien.
Dylan O'Brien. Logan Lerman's another, he was in Perks of Being a Wallflower. So we'll do that. We're going to do Movie Battles Part 3. The week after that, we're going to do Best Sports Movies with a special guest. Can't announce that yet, but we're also going to review 50 Shades Freed that week.
Great.
Can't wait for that. After that, we're going to review Black Panther, February 22nd. That episode 25, we're going to have a special guest for that one. Episode 26, big one. It's our Oscars special and the first annual Goscars. So our award show, where everyone's going to vote on it, all of our awards. So we're going to release the nominees. It'll be like the regular categories, Best Picture, but then we're going to have some fun ones as well, like Best Gnome Farting Trailer of the Year. And all of our listeners and followers, you will vote on all those awards. And then lastly, March 8th, we're going to review Red Sparrow with Joel Edgerton, a.k.a. Orc Cop, and Jennifer Lawrence, and segment to be determined. So those are the movies and the things that we're going to have released in the next month and a half, 2 months or so. And we have that schedule out on Twitter, so you can know what to see and be prepared for with the podcast. Any you're particularly excited for, guys, in these first 10 episodes of the year? Besides, I think Black Panther. I think we all want to see Black Panther. But us reviewing 50 Shades Freed, I'm ready for that.
I'm really excited for 50 Shades Free. I just can't wait to see what happens to Christian and Anastasia. Actually, one of the funny parts about that last movie is he gets into a helicopter crash, like right at the end of Act Two. And like the time it takes for him to get in the crash and show back up okay is literally 4 minutes. just no drama.
Super just realistic.
Really great movies.
You kind of stole my thunder, because I was just going to say the only real one I'm super excited for is Black Panther. But if I guess I had to choose another one.
That was the obvious one, though. Are you most excited for Arctic Justice Thunder Squad?
Yeah, you know what?
out of this group, it's either it's probably that or Den of Thieves, I guess, if I had to pick. So why not? Arctic Justice it is. Thunder Squad. Thunder. And
just a young gun
with the quick fuse.
Oh, I don't know that song well enough. I was going to play Thunder at the end of the podcast because we have the Brunch Guys on next week, and they have really cornered the market on that. But I do need to end with
Rock Me Amadeus.
Like, for the love of God.
It's almost like we're trying to do a bit here or something.
Yeah. Come on, Jeff.
Okay. I will. We'll open up with Thunder next week. Maybe we'll have a special intro. So that's been news. Let's get into what matters. Our reviews of The Greatest Showman and Jumanji when we come back on the other side of this break. Oh, boy. The Greatest Showman. We'll get right into it, and we'll debate, because there's going to be some debate. We'll be right back on Lights, Camera, Podcast.
From the studio that brought you Slender Man the movie comes the hit new animated film, which brings you an in-depth look at the world of memes. Inside Brogan Logan's Twitter account, at BonerChode42069, lives the secret world of Memeopolis. There exists all of the memes used by Twitter.com, including Melvin, a white blinking guy meme that wants to be more than what he was raised to be. And when he finally gets called to be tweeted by Brogan, he accidentally posts the Cash Me Outside reaction instead of the white blinking guy and gets Brogan roasted online.
At police, this tweet right here. Imagine bringing a baby 9 months to term just to have them tweet that. Corn cob ass motherfucker.
He gets sent to the meme junkyard where he meets the dancing hot dog meme. Together, the two roam the wastes of Twitter to try and find their way to a land where old memes don't matter.
What's that creepy song, hot dog?
I don't know, it sounds like crying. Oh my god, it's the crying Northwestern kid. Run! Everyone get inside, I'll protect you.
Who are you?
I am Salt Bae, and my magic bath salt will fend off the... Oh my god.
What's happening to his hands?
They got turned into the monkey getting haircut meme. Run! Run while you still can!
Where are we now, hot dog?
I don't know. It looks like some sort of OK Corral.
Who's that?
Pew pew, I'm the sheriff of sucking you off.
What?
And I'm gonna suck you off.
Watch as our heroes finally arrive to a land where you can be outdated, problematic, and outright terrible.
Oh my god, hot dog, what is it?
This kid is Facebook.
Coming summer 2019.
Okay, we are back. This has been a highly anticipated review for Lights, Camera, Podcast, partly because Ken Jack has made it a thing. It's like your brand now.
It's not a great brand to have, to be honest.
Look, now that the review is over, you need to find a new brand, and I feel like you should find one that is less awkward to talk about on air sometimes.
I will give Ken Jack this. This past couple of weeks, ever since The Greatest Showman came out, there have been multiple think pieces on P.T. Barnum. And kind of covering up the history. And Ken Jack's been on this train since October almost. So, you know, maybe get yourself out there a little more, Ken Jack. Write a few articles or something.
We'll tackle that off the top. Like the moral issues with this movie. We won't get too political here, but we will talk about that because you have to talk about that when reviewing this movie.
It's not really political. I think it's like everybody on all sides hates slavery.
Yes. Well,
I can agree with that.
Yes, we can agree on that. But first off the top, scores. I gave it a 66 out of 100. Trill, what did you give it?
Gave it a 60. 60.
Ken Jack, what did you give it?
A gentleman's 37.
That's fair, because it was higher than I thought you'd give it. You rated it higher than The Nut Job 2 and Happy Death Day.
It was better than both of them.
Significantly higher. Than Happy Death.
It was. See, that's the thing too. I walked out of it and I wanted to give it a single digit score, and it wasn't worth that, to be honest.
The Greatest Showman.
No, I wanted to just because of my brand about hating P.T. Barnum so much, but I couldn't do it because I had to remain objective.
We'll get into the bad of the movie, the bad or the good of like where it ranks throughout the year, because you did say something to us in our group chat about Greatest Showman compared to another movie we reviewed recently that I was reading in the movie theater, and I almost got out of my chair and walked out because I needed to like have a breather somewhere and scream at you because I was so upset by what you said. But we'll get into that. Yes, off the top, this movie completely is a character fake world about P.T. Barnum, for sure. Like, no doubt about it. They make him, they make him look like a really attractive man, which is bullshit because he's not. He's not a good looking dude. And for Hugh Jackman to portray you is a blessing. Even if Hugh Jackman's portraying an already good looking person, that's a blessing for you to begin with. P.T. Barnum is not a good looking dude at all. So just off the looks aspect of it. But then again, it goes into the story. Part of the thing with this movie is it's a very paper thin story and it's not deep at all. But beyond that, it's also fake. Like, for the most part, it's just it skirts away from all of the controversial things that make P.T. Barnum who he was.
And trying to make it out like he's doing a positive service, like inspiring them, when in reality, you know, they were in this show to be exploited pretty much. I don't, you know, that one in terms of just telling the story doesn't sit right to me. But when I watched it, I tried to separate because Hollywood does this all the time. I mean, even like biopics and whatnot. I mean, they take liberties with the movie, but this was a huge liberty in terms of rewriting the character. So, you know, as a movie, I tried to judge it on my experience watching it rather than just the general premise of taking something of like a guy who created a sideshow at a circus and a circus as a whole and making it seem like he's an inspiring figure, you know?
Well, that's my thing with Ken Jack. And look, again, you didn't rate it single digits. I'll give you credit. But you can't rate a movie, I think, based on that part of the story, because there are so many movies that the three of us and our listeners and followers love that are true stories that take a lot of liberties that really don't play out the way they say they play out. I mean, I could read a list for the next 30 minutes, I'm sure, of just movies from the last 5 to 10 years that are like that. So, I mean, I don't think you can rate this movie based off of that. While it is very true, nothing that Ken Jack said, let me be clear, nothing he said is a hyperbole. P.T. Barnum sucks. Like, there's no hyperbole in what you're saying, but I don't think that you can grade the movie based off of that, because as Trill said, movies all the time, probably a couple movies a month that are true stories, take liberties with the story.
Yeah, I think the biggest liberty is of all, maybe, was what you were saying, Jeff, is that P.T. Barnum kind of looks like Josh Gad drank from the wrong Holy Grail, and they got played by Hugh Jackman. So that's a huge fucking liberty. And I mean, it's one thing if the movie was really good or something. It's not. It's not good. It's an empty vessel of a movie. It's nothing. It's like, I don't know how to describe it. Like, I think that's what I was saying in our group chat, is that it's essentially just a vessel to convey songs. It feels almost as if like it was made in a boardroom, and that all of the people around the board are like, what's something we can use, a vessel we can use to convey choreography really easily and bright colors really easily. And some old dickhead was like, hey, I loved the circus when I was little because we didn't have the talkies or anything else interesting to look at. So they decided to choose the circus because it has a very easy, it's a very easy venue for them to show off some choreography and songs. And they just did that. And this movie is just empty of any meaning and any life and any joy. It's just nothing.
We will not agree on the bad part or terrible, but it is not good. I think we can all agree on that. It is not a good movie. Anything that I rate a 70 or above, I can, from 70 to above, I can start to say good. And then as I get higher, obviously it falls into the good category. This movie could have been good. I think it could have definitely been good. And we'll get into the details here in a minute, but I think we can agree on the fact that no, it is not a good movie. But I think beyond that, I'm not sure how much we will agree. But you can continue your point, because I will read the actual plot of this movie and like what actually happens in this movie compared to, you know, the real P.T. Barnum himself. So before I get into this, spoiler alert, I guess. I mean, I'm not sure it's totally needed, but spoiler alert. So I'm going to get into the plot summary now as best as I can. The movie starts out with him as a kid. He meets his wife. And they kind of go back and forth. There's a really long number that lasts throughout most of the first, I think probably like 15, 20 minutes of the movie.
Yeah.
Not straight music, like not straight music, but it dips in and out. And it's about his life and courting his future wife and all of that. And then they finally live together. They start a family, and he starts his, like, not circus, but his museum that ends up turning into a circus. And along the way, he recruits Zac Efron's character. He recruits the freaks, which includes Zendaya's character, Beard Lady, all of that. So it leads into that and him growing this brand and this business. His daughters help him realize he needs live performers. It becomes very popular. He brings in a opera singer along the way, which leads to issues with his wife, the troupe with some of the freaks and like the sideshow people and Zendaya and all them, Beard Lady. They get upset with P.T. Barnum because he's focusing more on like, you know, the opera singer and the corporate side of everything and becoming famous and rich as opposed to like the real reason they started it. So there's a lot of conflict there. There's conflict with Zac Efron's character, who is a playwright that P.T. Barnum brings on board to help launch the circus into something greater. There's conflict between him and Zendaya's character because they have a love interest. And so it all kind of boils to a head here, and there's different types of things that they have conflicts over. But in the end, it all works out. You know, he's back with his wife, who ended up finding out about he didn't really cheat on her, but there was, you know, there were some questionable things happening as the opera singer fell for P.T. Barnum. And so in the end, you know, it all works out, which you kind of just know happens. That's part of the problem. It's not like any of these conflicts are crazy. Like, oh, Zac Efron's parents don't like Zendaya's character. Or, you know, it's like, oh, wow, the opera singer kissed P.T. Barnum. You know, like, is he ever going to get back with his wife? Like, there's no point where you're like, oh, what's going to happen? Like, there's a huge fire at the circus and Zac Efron's character gets injured. There's no point. You're like, oh, I wonder if they're going to get out of this one. Like, you know how it's going to end. Mostly because the beginning of the movie is the ending of the movie as well. It's like this big song at the end of the movie. And so you know it's all going to work out in the end. You know the circus happens. You know who P.T. Barnum is. So that's kind of the story. And I think that's part of the problem is that there's no point in this movie where you're like, oh, boy, like, I feel for these characters. I wonder what's going to happen next. You just, more so than any cookie-cutter biopic, you just know it's going to happen and just move scene to scene with music in between. Let's get into it a little bit. I think the main thing, and Troy, you want to touch on this because Troy, you've mentioned you like Broadway, you know, you like Hamilton. You don't say it on Twitter, but you do say it on the pod. We all enjoyed La La Land, but true musical fans criticize La La Land because it wasn't a true musical. This movie is a musical. There is music in the entire movie. Like, if you were to fast forward this movie when it comes out, the chance of you landing on a musical number are much higher than landing on a part where it's just dialogue. It's a musical through and through. But my problem, and you guys can touch on it more, is that I think it's a movie built around music as opposed to music that is built into a movie. And that's why it just doesn't work for me well, even though I do love the music. I know, Kendrick, you're not a huge fan of the music. I think the music is okay. Fantastic. I think the music's fantastic.
I think there was two really good songs.
So Hamilton, going back to that, Hamilton took a lot of liberties with the story. I mean, even historical facts, they've changed around like what actually happened in the time frame. You have to do that. Going back to Ken Jack's point about the boardroom, this movie and all movies are pretty much movies by committee these days, I think. This one just didn't feel like it tried to hide it. And it almost felt like, going back to what Jeff said, it almost felt like we have a bunch of songs and, oh shit, now we need to make something around it. What I like about Hamilton is Hamilton's a stage show, and I've seen it. And for some reason, a full on musical where almost every line is music works so much better as a stage show than it does as a movie. And seeing something in a movie that's just all music, it's, I don't want to say it's cringy, because for me it is when everybody just starts singing. It just works better on stage than it does in a film. Even though the music was really good in here, it's just not what I like out of a movie. So, you know, perfect movie to release around the holidays, perfect movie to bring the family to, you know, rack up $150 on your AMC Stubbs account between tickets and everything, bringing the kids, come away inspired or whatever. But it just felt like almost too forced and too saccharine. And when you did get to the music, it didn't flow like a musical normally does. It's like you have the music, now create a story around it.
It's almost like the story in between the songs was there just so you could have a second to breathe. Like, just like a breather. That's really what it was.
It's filler.
It's a transition to the next song. And like, I understand that. And maybe it would have worked better in a stage show. I don't know. The music was good though. I liked it, but as a movie, it just didn't really seem like good. It seemed okay. And that's my big takeaway here is
I think you and I agree completely. Mediocre.
I think you're below 50 or bad.
It's mediocre. I gave it a 60, but I kind of want to bump it down a little bit just because it tried so hard to be mediocre. it was from the start, we're going to create a movie that is just going to get families in the seats and they're going to come see it. And it's the holidays and everybody's going to be inspired and whatnot. And we're not going to take any chances. And we're going to get Hugh Jackman, who's always a safe bet. And at no point was it really interesting. And I think it's because of that. It's because of that, you know, movie by committee type of design. It's trying to force a movie around songs. And the songs were good. What was it? The team from La La Land did it. And they're great. But that's why I liked La La Land. It's a movie, but it's not a full musical. And that's why I think it works so well in the La La Land context, is because there's a lot of dialogue and there's a lot of character building that's not done in song. Here, you don't really get that. And here, there's not much character building to begin with.
It's kind of weird, too, because they focus on the A plot of P.T. Barnum and then the B plot of Zac Efron's character, which is completely made up. The entire time, I thought that his character was basically going to be like, I guess, Bailey from Barnum and Bailey. But he's just a completely fake character that they invented for the movie. So they focus on P.T. Barnum for the first half of the movie and then basically abandon him, but then expected you later in the movie to kind of be attached to his emotional resolution with his wife, which is also tied to a weird sort of completely made up fact about the opera singer, because they make the opera singer like cheat on or try and have sex with P.T. Barnum because like, oh, I get along with you so well because we both come from nothing. We both know what it means to be nothing and go to something. I looked up the lady. The lady was like mega rich aristocrat from like a really rich Swedish family. She donated every cent she made from the Barnum circus to charities. So she had nothing to do with P.T. Barnum whatsoever other than going on this tour, which is weird for me to make that the like the MacGuffin of the plot, to have her turn around P.T. Barnum and like fuck up his circus by quitting the tour. But it's whatever. That's for another thing. The whole plot just sort of seemed like, it was really tough to follow along because they kept jumping in and out from, okay, pay attention to Zac Efron's character arc. Oh, wait, never mind. We're back to P.T. Barnum now. Oh, wait, no, actually Zac Efron and his romance with the pink-haired lady who, what was really her trick other than being an acrobat? But all right, we're going all over the place, folks. It's just, it's not good. And it's just a bad movie. And it's like you guys were saying, it's they built it around the songs and they didn't build it around the plot.
Well, you can't say it's a bad movie like you guys were saying. Because we never said it was a bad movie.
Yeah, it's not a bad movie.
It is a bad movie. It just is. I would recommend a lot of mediocre movies to people. I would recommend movies that I think are like borderline bad, borderline good, whatever you want to say. I would recommend a lot of those. I will never tell anybody to watch Greatest Showman. I will never watch Greatest Showman again for the rest of my life.
So you said, okay, because now it's time for me to start calling you out here. I don't think it's a bad movie. I think that the acting is fine in this movie. There's nothing wrong with the acting.
The acting was bad.
What?
Michelle Williams did not want to be there.
No, it was no.
Michelle Williams and Zac Efron did not want to be there at all. You could tell.
Yeah, I don't see that. I think that's just what Zac Efron is. I think that's who you get with Zac Efron.
Michelle Williams.
I think that's just how
she didn't want to be there at all. And you could tell this is Hugh Jackman's movie.
She wasn't bad, but her role wasn't that big.
It definitely was Hugh Jackman's movie, but
he was great, by the way. He was fantastic.
Who else acted besides Michelle Williams, Zac Efron, and Michelle Williams?
But that's the thing. It goes beyond that, too, because the thing that you really like about the movie, or at least I liked about the movie, was the choreography, was the music, was the singing. It's a musical. I think the acting, as little as it was in there, but the little acting that was in there because of like dialogue was fine. And I think with Hugh Jackman, it was fantastic. And I think the music and all the musical numbers were great.
It seemed like he was like the little brother that's overeager and so hyped up about what's going on. And like Zac Efron and Michelle Williams are like the older siblings. Like, why? Or I guess we have to do this because we're being forced to.
Michelle Williams' character played along the same lines as him until the circus got bigger. And I think that's part of the storyline, though, is her character doesn't buy in as much because she's being kind of cast off to the side. I didn't have an issue with Zac Efron. That's just who Zac Efron is, I think.
He's a bad actor. Then it's still bad acting.
I've seen bad movies with him, but I don't think his acting was bad.
I just don't think he looked like he was into it, and that probably because the movie sucked.
I think we're somewhat on the same page. I think we're just rating it at different levels of severity. When we were in a musical scene, it was an enjoyable movie, but how we get to the point of the music just kind of sucks. And I think it just like that. That's why it's just so mediocre to me, because it's not an interesting story. It's almost like going on YouTube and watching 8 different clips of different musical performances.
Yeah.
And then we're like, okay, we'll write something in.
You could probably sum it up really, like, instead of watching the movie, watch like the 20 minute reel of all the musical performances, and then you've seen the entire movie, because everything else is just filler. There's no point to it.
The main part of the movie, it's a musical, and I think the music is fine. That's why, like, it's not good. 66 is not a good rating for me. I mean, I rated below a lot of movies that I would consider just okay. I mean, it's below Happy Death Day for me. Cars 3, it's below Cars 3. It's below Alien Covenant, Life for me. I mean, for you, Ken, Jack, this is, you rated this movie very similarly to Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tales. The movie is ass. That's an ass movie.
I will say this. I will steadfast my review for The Greatest Showman 60. I will never watch that movie again. But if Pirates of the Caribbean, I don't know how you say that, ever comes on TBS, I'll probably watch that just because it's
Dead Men Tell No Tales.
I'd watch that one again.
But remember,
there's just no,
we're not rating off watchability though. We're rating off the one time watch. And we got into this with a few people on Twitter too about like Dunkirk. Is that like, I rate Dunkirk very high. Do I think it's the most rewatchable movie? No, but for me, it's about the experience of the movie within itself, within that vacuum of when you see the movie. But I mean, that's, I think that's for a whole nother discussion, because I think that's going to come up.
But that's what you said about Star Wars too. That's what you said about Star Wars too. Does that get its own like separate thing?
What do you mean?
You said like you need to rewatch it in order to like completely get it.
No. There's a difference between me needing to rewatch things, understand it, and like them. But I'm just saying there's a rewatchability factor. Just because there's something that, you know, like, for example, what was the movie with Leo that he won for Best Picture? The Revenant. I didn't like it at all the first time, but I knew I understood what the movie was, and it's not a pleasant movie. It's not rewatchable, but I watched it again and I appreciated it more and what the performance was and how the movie was made. I'm just separating rewatchability from the fact that I'm going to rewatch something probably more than once in order to properly rate the movie. That's different.
I guess maybe the extent in which you would want to recommend it to somebody. I will never tell anybody to watch that. I will never watch it again. Pirates is around that Dead Men Tell, whatever that, what was the last one?
Ass movie, Dead Men Tell No Tales, where that? None of them in that movie wanted to be there. Or it's also known as Salazar's Revenge if you're listening in other countries. We do have, I mean, we may have some Australian listeners now based from having James from the Weekly Planet on, who shouted us out on his podcast, by the way. Huge thanks to that. That was awesome. But yeah, so if you saw in Australia, it's called Salazar's Revenge. But here it's Dead Men Tell No Tales. But I'm not as upset about the fact that it's around that movie for you, because I'm more upset that you said that not only was the movie better than Greatest Showman, but the acting, the plot, everything was better. You said Daddy's Home 2 was better than The Greatest Showman. That is ridiculous. That is ridiculous.
Part of that, I'll give it this. Part of that is I definitely enjoy comedies, as unfunny as that movie was, more than I enjoy musicals for the most part. But I definitely was a more entertaining experience in Daddy's Home. Daddy's Death Day.
let me chime in here. I will defend Daddy's Home too, in the sense that there's not a single soul who went in to go work on that movie who thought that movie was going to come out good. Nobody involved with Daddy's Home too thought that they were going to make a good movie. I feel like with Greatest Showman, they thought they were going to make a prestige musical. And
Hugh Jackman's passion project. Yeah.
It was Hugh Jackman's passion project, and it got the advertising, and it was a big, big movie. It was a beautiful movie, but overall, as a movie, in terms of, you know, start, middle, and end, it just didn't seem like much was there other than the musical set pieces, which I know it's a musical, and that's the point, but I think there are musicals, at least on movies, that do a much better job. Chicago is probably my favorite movie musical, and I think it probably does the best job of intertwining all of that.
Another Hugh Jackman musical, Les Miserables. I mean, I don't like that movie that much at all. It's an okay movie. I think I gave it in the 70s, but it was a better story and it worked better. I just don't know how you can say it's worse than Daddy's Home too. Like, I understand that you like comedies more, but I mean, first of all, you gave Daddy's Home 2 a 27 out of 100, and you gave Greatest Showman a 37 out of 100. So let me just make that point clear right now. I obviously hated Daddy's Home 2 out of the three of us the most. I gave it a 12 out of 100. And I understand your point, Trill, of them making that movie, not expecting it to be good. But again, I'm reviewing and rating these things all, for the most part, in the same scale. I for kids' movies, I do try to differ a little bit, because I know it's based on for a certain audience. But I don't know. I don't know how you can think it's that bad. That's bad. 37. Well, yeah. Like, look, I understand. So I don't agree that mediocre means bad. I think that's you just not understanding what the word means.
No, but I completely understand it. It's just my scale of rating movies. Again, yes. For like the 10th time, you guys are well aware of this. It's bad or it's good. There is no in between, really, for me. Like, you're either on the cusp of bad or the cusp of good. Like, there's no like, oh, man, that's all right. It's okay. It's like,
but my thing is, if you think it's bad, that's fine. Like, I can't sway your opinion. If you think it's bad, I totally respect that. However, but to say what you did about Daddy's Home 2, it's insanity to me. It's insane that you think that this movie, The Greatest Showman, is a worse movie with incredible set pieces for the musical numbers. No, it was. There were
fucking 90% of that shit movie is CGI, and the CGI is done poorly.
It looks fantastic. All of the music, the choreography, all of that looks great.
Oh, I disagree so hard. The CGI was awful. In my rating scale, I rate Greatest Showman better because objectively it is a better movie. I personally enjoyed Daddy's Home 2 more than I enjoyed Greatest Showman. This isn't like my personal – I think everybody will think Daddy's Home is better. My more entertaining experience was from Daddy's Home 2. But objectively, I think Greatest Showman is a better movie if you go through like all the A to B, what makes a movie good.
I think that makes sense. I mean, everybody's got different tastes, right? That's one of the things we embrace on the podcast.
I'm sending Ken Jack the behind-the-scenes reel of Greatest Showman with the real set pieces, by the way. There was added CG elements to it, but
I think literally only the bar scene.
I think from what I saw, looked good. The set pieces look good. The choreography is great. That's where I'm basing it off of. This movie, in the same way I would rate a movie like, I don't know, Arctic Thunder, Justice, Dawn of Judd, that shit CGI movie we review soon. If it's marketed for kids, or like the movie like Minions, it's made for kids, I'm going to think about that in that sense. This is a musical. I'm thinking about it in that sense. And nobody come at me with Daddy's Home 2 being for families, because that is not a family movie. That's garbage. So just on that point, but that's how I'm rating it. And that's me justifying my reason why I rated it what I did. And that's, again, I understand why you rated it what you did, but when you pull it down, Daddy's Home too.
Let me distill what I think about this. If you love musicals, I think you'll like this movie. If you like musicals, you may think it's mediocre like me. And if you don't like musicals, like, I don't think Ken Jack likes musicals, and that's okay. It's hard to get through because there's nothing connecting the music. And I think that's what he's getting at, is if there's at least something there connecting the music, then maybe I can enjoy it as a movie. But if it's just 9 YouTube clips of Hugh Jackman, like being like, I am the greatest showman on earth. I have people in my circus.
Yeah, what connects the music is very thin. Like, there's a whole scene, which I think the music is great. I think it's good, and it's fun to watch. The choreography where Zendaya and Zac Efron are arguing, but the way it gets to that, it's a thin plot about the parents. And it's like, it just really isn't – you're right. It doesn't connect well. But again, that's why we didn't rate it. It's not buttered. It's officially not buttered by the podcast. It's not approved by us. So none of us are recommending this. I think that's the funniest thing about it. I tweeted about the fact that I can't believe Kendrick is making me defend this movie, because it's not a good movie at all.
It's only a 30-point difference.
Not terrible. And actually, the funny thing is, it's one of the higher rated movies on Rotten Tomatoes, because everyone wants to talk about the audience score with Rotten Tomatoes right now because of another movie that we're not going to talk about right now. I said we weren't going to talk about it. We're not going to talk about it. But everyone's harping on these audience scores. It has a 90% audience score on Rotten Tomatoes. People are enjoying that part. And I think it has to do with time of year. When you release a musical in this time of year, and I think for some reason, just because I think kids are home from break and they're seeing it with their parents, people do enjoy it. So, look, I don't know. I don't think it's, again, 90% doesn't translate to 90 out of 100. I think the audience score is like a B-. When you break it down, the actual grade, I don't think it's that good. But I don't know. I think the part I was most offended by is when you said Daddy's Home 2 is better, because I don't think objectively it's a terrible movie. Because that's terrible.
That's going to be my new trigger phrase for you. I'll just say things are Daddy's Home better than anything. I'm going to be like, the post is the new Daddy's Home, Jeff.
The most egregious thing that you said to us was when you said when you rated Happy Death Day worse than Nut Job 2 Nutty by Nature. That was still that was a shocking moment for me and Trill.
Yeah, closing thoughts on this, because we've been on this forever. It was an empty vessel for songs, and the songs weren't good enough. And if the songs were good enough, you take away all of the shit with P.T. Barnum being whitewashed to not be a shithead, whatever, and it's an objective movie. The songs weren't good, and the plot was nothing. It was not substantial. It was like literally like you're eating a fucking, it was like the, what do you call it? Like the rice cake of like movies. It was garbage. So like if the songs were good, I agree with you, especially the two songs, the negotiation song I thought was really good. And the main theme song was really good. I liked Efron's song as well. Like the one where they're doing all the acrobatic stuff. That was pretty good too. But the rest of it was like nothingness really. It was like, but I don't know.
It's just, I would like that movie to have had a lot more in the in-between, like we've been saying this entire time, and it just wasn't there.
That's fair. I agree with you. I'm much less severe on my score.
That's what I think is funny, is that we kind of agree with him to a certain extent, but I think the rating is, it's, I mean, you rated it terrible. That's a terrible rating.
It's a difference of 23 points, and you guys are going to war with me.
I'm not going to war with you. I'm mediating this conversation, to be fair. I'm the ombudsman or whatever.
23.
Never, oh, that's great.
I never know how to pronounce that. I just know ESPN always had one.
I don't know how to pronounce that either. I'm just going for it. The guy at ESPN who's like, well, technically we shouldn't have ran that story about Michael Vick with that Photoshop. On the other hand, it was a pretty fucking funny Photoshop.
I think you're right. 23 points, yes. I know we're going to war over this. But the difference is that 23 points, it's not like I rated it 100 and you rated it a 77. You know, where I still think, you know, we could argue a little bit. I think it's the fact that in between what we rated it is the line of, for me, terrible or bad and just being mediocre fine.
I think if you should be more mad, if anything, if you rated something 100 and I rated it a 77, that would, I think, would be more egregious than 60 to 37.
Well, no, what I'm saying is the line between what we're rating it is the line for me where you can distinguish a movie being either terrible and bad to mediocre and fine, which is, I think, where it is. And for me, I get more wound up when people say something is terrible that I don't think is terrible, as opposed to when people don't like something I think is good, because there are some movies that I think are great. For example, Social Network, you know, you guys said it was like a big steamy fart in a car, but I was like, I moved on. I'm okay with it up. But for some reason, and maybe it's just me personally, I just get more offended when somebody says something's terrible or the worst.
I didn't say either
when I don't think it is. Well, you said it's terrible.
I said it
you
bad.
Definitely said it's terrible.
Terrible is enough. How terrible would be 20s?
Okay, before we go, Ken Jack, this is your first mistake of the year. You did just say, I said it was bad. Terrible would be in the 20s. Ken Jack, at 4:18 p.m. Eastern time, about The Greatest Showman, said, it's terrible.
All right, then I stick by that. Terrible.
Lights, Camera, Podcast is a free-flowing conversation that may touch on mature subjects.
I would like to remind you guys again, I said this episode one of Lights, Camera, Podcast, my word means nothing. It's garbage. So don't try and hold to it. I've said it episode one. Every time you think you got this big gotcha moment, you don't, bitch.
I think this is why this podcast is great, because we're doing it, one. And then two, Jeff's mostly the movie guy, and me and Ken Jack are people that just see movies. And so, I go back to that audience score of 90% on Rotten Tomatoes versus a 55% critic score. Who's loving this movie? Is this going to become like 11 and 12 year olds coming onto Rotten Tomatoes and rating it? Is this going to become like a new Newsies or Willy Wonka type classic where 20 years from now people are watching The Greatest Showman like a classic? I could see that, because it is kind of like one of those movies where you could show it in like a seventh grade classroom when the teacher's hung over. Greatest blowman.
Hey. We've been looking forward to this one for a while. I'm glad we got to vent and have a little argument. It's good to have a little debate now and then.
My name is P.T. Barnum, and I have all the circus freaks. I have a beard lady right here. I have a man who gleeks. I have a dog with eight legs. Oh, it's actually a fucking spider.
Was that our first ever live commercial?
Come and see The Greatest Showman. Bailey is that, not in the movie for some reason.
They said that The Greatest Showman did the first ever live commercial for a movie or live trailer. So that's our live commercial. That's going to bridge the gap for us to Jumanji. Jumanji was a movie that I thought was not going to be any good at all. And if you would have told us months ago that we would have liked this movie significantly more than we liked Greatest Showman, I would have said, that's wrong. You're lying. But we did. We liked it, some of us, a lot more, and for the others, a decent amount more. Troy, you gave it a 70, correct?
I did. I liked it.
Ken Jack, 71 for Jumanji. I gave it an 80. Yep. This is a fun movie. This was, and I hate saying movies are fun. I really, really do, because it sounds like you didn't really see the movie.
It's a perfect descriptor. It's like my second word when I was.
Yeah, it's a fun movie. You have a good time with it. It has its flaws. We'll get into them. But Jumanji, surface level first reactions. Trill, Jumanji, welcome to the jungle. Not Jumanji. Jumanji's the one with Robin Williams. This is Jumanji, welcome to the jungle.
See, that the title's weird because we've already been to the jungle in the first one, and now we're being welcomed to the jungle in the second one. So right off the bat, 10 points were docked for that. You know how when you get to like the election day, it feels like election day's been here for 2 years already because of all the lead-ins and the debates and whatnot?
Yes.
Jumanji felt like this because I feel like this movie's been promoted since 2013. Hmm. Like, again, it's another one of these things with like The Rock starts early on his Instagram. Like, he'll have a movie coming out in 2021, yes, and he'll like post a picture of himself eating waffles, and he's like out here hustling, filming Jumanji or whatever. So I felt like this movie has been in the works for like 18 years. So it was nice to finally see it. And when I did see it, it was enjoyable. It was a fun, fun movie. You compare like Jumanji and The Greatest Showman, which were probably the biggest like Christmas Eve, Christmas Day opens. And Jumanji was the better Christmas movie because there was a story. It's kind of weak. It was just a lot of fun. And they played a lot with a lot of like video game tropes, which a little bit like eye rolling at some points, but kind of clever enough to say like, that's kind of
funny. I thought they were really creative. Yeah.
And I think it's like you guys are saying, you had told us that we would enjoy it a few months ago, I'd be like, get the fuck out of here. Cause it's like, it's going to be disgraceful to Robin Williams' memory. It's going to be bad. This is a classic, but it's enjoyable. I think the best word I had for it is it's entertaining. It's an entertaining movie to watch. And like, there's no point in it where I'm like, oh, I got to stop watching this. Oh, I got to do something else. Like, it's good. It's a fun movie. I don't know. It's like we just said, we hate saying fun, but it's the perfect word for it.
Yeah, I think, and before we'll get into spoilers, because we will give a little spoiler warning here for this one. But before we get into that, I think the favorite thing out of the movie for me was watching them play different types of people, watching them not play to their typical typecasted role, seeing The Rock be kind of a wimp to an extent. You know, Karen Gillan's player has no confidence. And or the character she's her real life character is that way. So that's what she portrays in the game. And then Jack Black, I think, is easily the best part of the movie. He plays the stereotypical high school hot chick and he nails it. I thought in the first trailer, because the first trailer, they have the line where he says, I can't even with this place right now. And I'm like, oh, this is like, again, I'll reference Trill reading Sony's Spider-Man idea about him doing millennial things. Like, I was like, oh, this is going to sound really stupid, the whole movie. But no, he does a great job at portraying that. Kevin Hart, I think you're either in or you're out on Kevin Hart at this point. He doesn't really do anything different than Kevin Hart normally does. He's just Kevin Hart. But it doesn't ruin the movie for me. I wish you would have had a different role or a different set of range he tried to hit in this one, like the other actors do.
I really love when The Rock plays in roles that kind of go against his Rock persona. We should just call him Dwayne Johnson because I don't think he wants to be called The Rock anymore.
Oh, yeah. We will call him DJ. DJ, yeah. Or Dwayne?
So DJ kind of did that in Central Intelligence too, a little bit.
Yeah.
With the teenager. Yeah, he was a big buff, but he was, was a nerd in high school and overweight and all that. And he kind of ended up being just like a happy-go-lucky dude who also is like, in the CIA or whatever. I really like seeing him be kind of a nerd in this movie. It was fun. He can do anything in my opinion, and he's just electric on screen. I mean, anytime he's on a television, on a monitor, on a screen, it's captivating. I don't know what it is about him. Easily the most likable celebrity. He was my favorite part of the movie. I thought Jack Black was good. I thought Karen Gillan was really good as well. Kevin Hart, he did his thing. I don't think it was Kevin Hart's fault. I just thought that character was like written to be too much of a worthless comedic relief type character. I mean, his weaknesses are that his weaknesses, one, is that he likes cake, and then speed and strength are his other weaknesses. So like they kind of set him up as like just having nothing to offer, and he ends up coming in and, helping in the end. But that's not Kevin Hart's fault. That's just the way the character was written. Taking an idea like The Breakfast Club and putting a new twist on it. Very similar to The Breakfast Club, in my opinion. Kids sent to detention, all have contrasting personalities, end up coming together, saving the day, maybe not so much a Breakfast Club, and then, learning to appreciate each other at the end. Just a lot of fun. Good old-fashioned family fun right here in Jumanji. 70 for me.
It's like Jeff said earlier, Kevin Hart, it's either you're in or you're out. And I'm personally not really into his humor. And it almost felt like his character was written around like a writer watching one of his stand-up sets, like, and then being like, okay, let's write his character around what his strengths are in this stand-up set.
like just make him like obnoxious. He'll make jokes about his height. We'll make jokes about him, like you were saying, strength and speed being low. Like it's just, it's like you'd like to see something different, almost like how Will Ferrell, Will Ferrell plays the same role in every single. I had to pause for a second to make sure. It's almost like he plays the same character in every movie.
New Year, New Me.
Exactly. It's like Will Ferrell plays the same role in every movie, but I enjoy it almost pretty much every time. But it's not the same for me with Kevin Hart, where he plays more or less the same thing in every movie, and I just don't like it too much. I thought all the rest of the acting was great. It's happy-go-lucky plot. Just entertaining. Entertaining movie. 71.
So spoiler alert right now for Jumanji Welcome to the Jungle. We're going to read the plot summary. Starts off, by the way, you see the original Jumanji board game, and it's picked up by somebody. They trip over it on the beach, and they bring it home for their kid, which, by the way, the kid's kind of a dick about it. The kid's like, board game, whatever, Dad. And we'll get into his role in the movie later. So then he puts the board game aside, but in the middle of the night, the board game evolves into a video game because I guess the board game sensed that the kid would rather play video games in 1996 when the movie is set. So the board game becomes a video game, and the kid gets sucked into the video game. Then the plot summary from there on is when four high school kids discover an old video game console with a game they've never heard of, Jumanji. They are immediately drawn into the game's jungle setting, literally becoming the avatars they chose. Gamer Spencer, he's kind of the nerdy character, becomes a brawny adventurer, a.k.a. Dwayne Johnson. Football jock Fridge, who is a former friend of Spencer and makes Spencer do his homework and all this stuff. He's, you know, the typical jock character. He becomes Kevin Hart, which is who's a like a smart guy but has none of the physical skills that Fridge has in real life. Popular girl Bethany becomes a middle-aged male professor, Jack Black, and Wallflower, as it's described here, Martha becomes a badass warrior played by Karen Gillan. What they discover is that you don't just play Jumanji, you must survive it to beat the game and return to the real world. They'll have to go on the most dangerous adventure of their lives, discover what Alan Parrish, Robin Williams, left behind 20 years ago and changed the way they think about themselves, or they'll be stuck in the game forever. They run along Nick Jonas, who plays, it's kind of the big reveal, he plays the young kid who was sucked into the game in 1996 to open the movie. And they actually reference that old house the kid lived in. And they, you see his dad, who's played by the guy that plays the vice president in the West Wing. And so you learn throughout the movie. And actually, when he first shows up, I kind of figured that's who it was. You see that it is the kid who was sucked into the game in 1996. So they all have to basically find a way to get this gem, which the gem is being sought after by Bobby Cannavale, who plays the villain. They have to get the gem to the center of this like Panther monument. And when they hit the monument and they get the gem in there, they go back into the real world. And, you know, they have all these video game tropes, and they can touch their peck and all their skills and weaknesses come up. You see how many lives they have on their forearm, which looks like a tattoo, but as they lose their lives, they lose part of the tattoo. So yeah, it plays into the video game tropes, and it's a very paint by number story. You know, it's, conflict. Now they're in a thing they have to figure out, and then it's happy ending in the end. So, you know, it's not a complex story by any means, but it's a good time. You know, they do it well, and I don't really have an issue with any of the video game stuff. I thought the cutscenes were funny. I liked how they would talk to characters, but the characters would only talk as much as they possibly can because it's a video game. Like, you know, if you're in a video game and you talk to a character who's just there as like a non-player character, they're only going to say a certain amount of things that are built in. I thought that was really funny and creative.
Yeah, I like those aspects where they're applying that video game logic into a movie. I wanted to say this though, guys. Nick Jonas looking like a snack.
Oh yes. Oh yeah.
Nick Jonas is like a snack in this movie.
A little bit. And also solid Colin Hanks cameo or kicks.
Yeah, because so Nick Jonas is the character, and the real life person of Nick Jonas is, as I said, the kid who gets sucked in the beginning of the movie. And then when he gets back to life and he's put back in the real world, he gets put back in 1996. So you see him grown up at the end of the movie. And yes, it is played by Colin Hanks.
Interesting. Jake Kasdan, I think, wrote and directed Jumanji both, but he directed Orange County, the 2002 movie, which had both Jack Black and Colin Hanks in it. So I always like when directors, writers work with similar talent, because it provides at least 25 seconds of good trivia to talk about on a podcast.
I don't have an insane amount to add on to it. I just thought it was fun, and I don't understand why a lot of the people... I saw some of the reviews. I think so far the critical ones weren't amazing, which is like...
I think it has like a 75, 77, something like that on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, I guess that's around where, it's around where we are, so it's nothing bad. So I don't know.
I'm reading one of the reviews from... one of the reviews from Adam Graham of the Detroit News says, Jumanji Welcome to the Jungle makes the original Jumanji look like a towering cinematic achievement. D+. Yeah, chill out, dude. It's like, I mean, take it for what it is.
That's definitely like a Settlers of Catan, like Die Hard or something. That's like, oh, they're taking away from the glory of board games.
they really infringe on board games property and cinematic lore. My one issue with the movie, let's talk about issues really quick, is I do think the villain is not really well fleshed out. It has its flaws. It drags a little bit. Like, I think it spends too much on like the love stories and the romantic stuff, but they don't really flesh out the Bobby Cannavale villain character very much. Like, I feel like there could have been a way, because they do go to a cut scene to explain the backstory of the game, and I wish they would have gone to more cut scenes like that. Like, you see the character moving throughout the movie, but I feel like they could have done a much better job at setting up the exposition for the villain, Bobby Cannavale's character, with maybe cut scenes or some sort of video game trope.
Did you see his eye makeup? Were you like,
yeah, that was kind of
fixed by that.
He looked like he should have been in the Pirates. Dead men have chests.
Dead men have chests?
Yeah, something like that.
He looked like he had eye makeup in the same way that Justin Theroux always looks like he has eye makeup on.
Yeah.
There's not much to go into with what I didn't like in this movie, because they don't give you much. I mean, it's not like a great movie because it's not that interesting. You know what I'm saying? It's not like a concept that's new or different or anything like that. It just is what it is almost. You got superstars playing these characters who have a twist added to it. It hits all the marks to where it's supposed to be, but it doesn't really provide anything special, but it's still just a really entertaining movie to watch. What's interesting though, is I think it's been killing it at the box office. I think it's been smashing. I'm on box office. Like, so Wikipedia says 325 million so far in terms of revenue. Box Office Mojo says 195. I don't know if like they break out domestic versus, foreign or whatever. I don't think they're apples to apples in terms of the number. The Fate of the Furious did 225 million, and Jumanji's already done 195. Furious 7 did 353 million. So I don't know if Jumanji will become DJ's highest grossing movie. But it certainly might be his highest grossing movie to where he is the de facto star of the movie. So props to him.
What was it up against what movie right now in box office, like number one, number two?
Well, I think it jumped over Star Wars.
It did finally. It was the first movie to overtake Star Wars. People were curious which movie that would be. Yeah, it ended up being Jumanji.
No, I saw something Insidious's guest is getting released this weekend or something. And they're like, yeah, maybe not a great time to release it going up against a DJ film. Like, yeah, no shit. Releasing a horror movie up against Dwayne The Rock Johnson is not great.
The Patrick Wilson stands are going to come out in full force, though.
It's true.
Wait, is he in Insidious?
Yeah.
Am I thinking of the Conjuring? I can't keep them straight. So one thing I wanted to point out with this one, because I don't really have any scathing reviews of this movie other than it's just like, it's not intellectually challenging. The CGI did look kind of weird to me. I know we talked about CGI a little bit on The Greatest Showman. I had no problem with it, the way it was utilized there. In Jumanji, it looked kind of off. I mean, maybe not off, but maybe not up to par with like a movie that's made $300 million so far. I don't know if you guys had the same complaint about that too, because I know sometimes that's kind of subjective.
It was very CGI heavy. I think there was a lot of CGI in it. It was relying on it. And I think to an extent that was fine because it is a video game, but I thought the animals didn't look very good. I thought the animals looked very off. Like when the jaguars were running at the end of the movie, chasing them in the final scenes, they looked very bad. They just didn't look good. It didn't take me out of the movie, but you're right. I think the CG in some things, especially the animals, just didn't look good.
And another thing is they didn't really leave it open to a sequel.
No, there's an alternate ending. Karen Gillan said that would have left it open. But no, as of right now, no.
I don't understand that, because it's doing so well. You think a sequel would have been a guaranteed moneymaker for him. So I don't know why they didn't do that. Because I would see Jumanji Welcome to the Jungle again. That's the title.
I do think Welcome to the Jungle. Welcome to the Jungle back yet again.
Welcome back to the jungle. Or maybe instead of Jumanji, they end up finding another video game that's like Arctic Thunder Blast. And they go like to different locations.
We're stuck on this movie, Arctic Thunder Blast.
It's not even the name of it.
Arctic Thunder Blast. Now we're just reciting the Dairy Queen menu.
No, I do think that they said they would do a sequel. I think Nick Jonas, Jack Black, Dwayne Johnson, I didn't think Kevin Hart, they all said they'd be on board. And Karen Gillan, like I said, she did mention that there was an alternate ending. So we liked it. We had a good time with it. And there's no real big complaints here. It's perfect for when it came out. I'm satisfied with it. You can tell The Rock really loved it, loved doing it. And good for him. Again, I tweeted this. This is a good example of why you shouldn't pre-rate movies and you shouldn't have a predetermination of a movie, because don't go into it with a closed mind. And I think that's the case for really any movie. I think this is a good example of that. If you're going to go see a movie, go with an open mind, because it may be like Jumanji where you enjoy it and you don't expect to. So Jumanji, once again, Trill is 70. I gave it an 80. Kenjack is 71. And a reminder on Greatest Showman, Trill gave it a 60. I gave it a 66. Kenjack gave it a 37. So those are our two reviews for the week. Jumanji and Greatest Showman. Pitch Perfect 3? You'll have to wait and see.
What? No, guys, I've actually been watching that movie since we started the podcast. I'm in the theater right now. And you will not believe, but the acapellas are back together. And this time, Fat Amy is as wacky as ever.
Hell yeah. Oh, that Fat Amy, always cracking me up.
I saw she was wearing a hat in the trailer where it said, "Make America Fat Again." That's funny, right?
Oh, it's funny.
What a great story, Mark.
I hate when they have a character who is like such a sub. It's like there's a whole trope of like Flanderization. It's where you take a character that's like beloved and maybe a minor character, and you accentuate their personality to just become an extreme form of them. Fat Amy was almost like a major minor bit character, or just more of a minor character in the first Pitch Perfect, and she worked. And then the second one, she became like a main focus of a movie. And then this one, I'm sure it's just all Fat Amy, which we can say that because that's the name of the character.
Olaf getting his own basically movie.
Yeah, well, no, that's my concern with Frozen 2 as well. I think, oh, that's dead on, Ken Jack. Olaf is another great example. Olaf and Fat Amy. Because that's what everyone talked about. Like, oh, Fat Amy's so funny. And she was fine in the first one. But, I mean, you didn't need to make her basically the 1A, 1B character to Anna Kendrick, is what I'm trying to say. That's basically what she became.
Anna Camp's so good, too. Like, she was such a good part of the first one that I don't know. Here we are dissecting the Pitch Perfect cinematic universe. Let's just move on.
We haven't even seen the third one yet.
Now I wish I made a Pitch Perfect cinematic universe mashup. Now I'm kind of pissed I didn't.
What a good segue, because we're going to talk about movie mashups. We're going to mash up our own movies, talk about what we want the plot to be, and then we have a ton of movie mashup ideas from our listeners and followers, and I will be tossing them at Trill and Kenjack, and they have to come up with plots on the spot. So that's how we're going to wrap up this podcast. So instead of commercial, we're going to play two clips that were requested that we didn't add in the clip show. One is from Kenjack, his pick of John Wick from the basketball week, and another one was the one clip everyone wanted us to play that we didn't play last week. So no commercial break here. We're just going to play two. You'll hear it. But we're going to play two clips right here. It's not at your expense. No, it's not. But we will play it here just to give the listeners what they want.
So for my shooting guard, I figured who on earth is better at shooting guards than John Wick? So I picked John Wick for my shooting guard.
And I like that.
Super athletic guy. He's got a lot of really cool Krav Maga moves, which I'm not sure if he's legally allowed to use on the court. But he's very sneaky, agile. I think he's good at shooting. He's the ideal shooting guard.
My name is Megatron, I am Megatron, and I'm here to kill robots. My name is Megatron, and I like to drink Diet Pepsi all day. My name is Megatron. My name is Megatron. My name is Megatron. My name is Megatron. Tron.
We're back here, Lights, Camera, Podcast. We got through our movie reviews, and now little fun movie mashups. A lot of people have been asking us to do something like this. And by the way, on our Reddit, we asked for segments, what people want to hear us do. And we got some great ideas for the rest of the year. And so keep tweeting those at us. Go to our Reddit and suggest what you want to hear us talk about. We have some really great stuff lined up for the rest of this year, which just started literally this episode. Movie mashups. I'll read off mine first because you guys are the funny men. I'll read off mine and maybe you can touch on the ones I want, but then you guys can elaborate a little more in depth on yours. Home Alone and Die Hard for me. I want the Home Alone Die Hard crossover. You can get the whole Christmas movie thing in there. You can get really meta and joke about it being a Christmas movie. Disney now owns both properties, so why not revitalize that? I feel like there's a way to do a grown-up Kevin McAllister with John McClane and the Sticky Bandits. Joe Pesci's great as well, but the actor that plays Marv, Daniel Stern, is probably looking for some good work. I've seen him in some Hallmark Christmas movies. Put him in a blockbuster. So I want the Home Alone Die Hard mashup. I don't know how it works. Maybe it works with Kevin McAllister's kids. Maybe it's Kevin himself. He's on like a business trip and encounters John McClane. But give me that one. Smoking Aces and Paul Blart Mall Cop.
Ooh.
Because remember, Paul Blart Mall Cop 2 was in Las Vegas. I'm not saying I want Paul Blart to brutally be destroyed by one of these Smokin' Aces characters, but Paul Blart getting into a battle with the Smokin' Aces characters, I'd be down for that. A Smokin' Aces style Paul Blart Mall Cop. And lastly for me, Ken Jack, I'm crossing over maybe your least favorite actor and your favorite movie. I want Baby Driver and Guardians of the Galaxy crossover.
Oh, man. Damn it. That's hard.
But see, I feel like you could get on board. The music angle. Yeah. Peter Quill down to Earth. You know, he's on Earth for a little while. After Avengers Infinity War all wraps up, he survives. And he gets in the car. And he takes Ansel Elgort's iPod and he gives him his Zune. And he says, no, I have some music. And he plugs it in. Give me that Baby Driver Guardians of the Galaxy mashup. All right, Ken Jack, we'll alternate. You start off with your first one. What movies are you mashing up?
My first one, I have very small plot summary, so please bear with me. My first one is Transforminators. So the year is 2059, and do you remember when in Transformers The Last Knight, Nitro Zeus bragged about having sex with the guard's wife? Well,
I do remember that. He actually did it.
And fearing reprisal for her young cyborg son, the baby's mother fled and left her son in a cavern under the Sierra mountain range. Baby Bozus, who's voiced by Russell Wilson, bid his time and multiplied his numbers underground, waiting for an uncertain future. And in the future, Skynet takes over, murdering humans by the boatload. And just when it seems like their supremacy is assured, John Connor finds Bozus and his civilization of super cyborgs. And an unlikely alliance forms, where Bose sends his strongest son, Nestle Bot, along with Kyle Reese's to the past, where he can fight John Connor. John Connor fights for the future.
I love that you based it off of the really messed up cucking robot.
Yeah, who fucked the guard's wife. It happened. It really happened.
He does say it happens in the movie. That whole scene is the worst. Transformers. I can't wait to talk about that movie again next week.
Your turn, Troll.
Okay, so I had one I based off a title, but the other's an actual movie. So I started with a hardcore Henry Jason Bourne mashup called Hardcore Bourne, but I couldn't really, that was mostly just for the title. I couldn't really think of anything to go with there. So I settled on Bourne Boys, which Jason Bourne teams up with Will Smith and Martin Lawrence to take down a Miami drug dealer who is both distributing cocaine and super soldier serum.
I like Jason Bourne being in that like more comedic Bad Boys universe.
Yeah, he's a straight man, and the Bad Boys play off of Jason Bourne. All right, you go, Ken Jack.
All right, so my second one is Pirates of the Caribbean, Fat Man's Farts. So this is a combination of Pirates of the Caribbean and Happy Madison universe. And Jack Black and the crew of the Black Pearl are roaming the seven seas looking for booty. And
Jack
they end up
Black.
Yeah, I fucked that up because I'm reading it off of the teleprompter over here. I spelled it out while I was watching Jumanji, actually watching it on the Megabus home.
All right, continue.
Jack Sparrow and the crew of the Black Pearl roam the seven seas looking for booty, and they end up with more than they can handle when they meet the crew of the Dutch Oven. Run by the infamous Captain Black Shart and his first mate, Turtleneck, who's played by Adam Sandler and Rob Schneider, they arrive and are shrouded in a fog of noxious gas provided by their master of arms, Wide Load, who's played by Kevin James. I almost forgot his last name. They board the incapacitated ship and steal Captain Jack Sparrow's latest treasure, the framed fart of the gout-ridden King Henry VIII, which was canned and preserved. Captain Shart seeks to smell this noble gas at the Galapagos Islands and unleashes villainous powers of the death fart of every human who has ever lived, holding the world at ransom. So what do you guys think of that?
That's pretty good.
I'm buttering again.
Have you guys heard of its sister project, Pirates of the Caribbean Diarrhea, yet?
Yeah, I have. That's actually in production hell.
Yeah, part of it leaked early, so they heard they were trying to release it a little early if they can.
Mid-game change of rules here. I'm the studio executive. I'm going to pick my two favorites. That one might be better than the Transformers Terminator one. I'm into just making a mockery of pirates. I like
that. We need
to
do it.
I like them summoning the Kraken, but it's just a guy that farts, basically.
Yeah.
All right, Trill, what's yours?
It's called Revolutionary Fury Road.
Ooh.
So Mad Max and Furiosa settle into a suburban life that is the house left behind by Leonardo DiCaprio and Kate Winslet's character in Revolutionary Road. And it's pretty much just like a remake of Revolutionary Road. And you know, I got the title down. I need to work on the story a little bit more.
Well, you're all about the title. That's fine. That's part of the marketing ploy anyway. You're all about marketing. We know that from your Disney basketball team.
Yeah. That's why we all have our specific strengths. Like I'm the creative guy. Trill's got all the marketing aspects, except I won't allow Mickey Mouse in my productions. So you call me a prima donna creative writer if you want. I don't care. So my next one is The Bourne Gambit. In an alternate future, Jason Bourne is living peacefully with his new wife in South America, running a horchata stand. And all of a sudden, somebody absolutely murders the shit out of his wife. And the only thing Jason Bourne sees before he gets knocked out is a string of Mardi Gras beads. Fast forward one week, and Jason Bourne is in New Orleans Federal Credit Union getting yet another safety deposit box full of guns and money. And the CIA sends their best agent, former X-Man Gambit, to take him out. After a quick confrontation where Gambit throws a few playing cards at Bourne, who easily deflects them and karate chops him in the face, they decide to team up and defeat their former handlers. The duo makes an assault on the CIA headquarters in Langley, and Gambit tries to disarm a guard with his cane, but is quickly and easily shot dead by the guard's service weapon. He will not be missed. Jason manages to get through the final door by sliding the lock, using a card that Gambit gave him, and finally finds out that his real dad was Brian Cox all along.
Wow.
Holy shit. Yeah, Gambit does suck.
I know what's really funny. I wrote this all like 3 days ago, and then I went on our Reddit this morning, and I just see like the very top thread is somebody saying, why does everyone make fun of Gambit? And I'm like, oh, my friend, just wait for today's episode. And he's a better title. Maybe me and Troll can workshop that. The Bourne Gambit just doesn't flow very well.
Troll, what's your last one before I make my pick here?
This movie is called Scott Pilgrim versus the World versus Batman versus Superman versus Aliens versus Predator versus X versus Sever versus Kramer versus Kramer versus Monsters versus Aliens versus Freddy versus Jason. And the plot of this movie is that Scott Pilgrim fights the world and Batman and also fights Superman, and he fights aliens, and he also fights the Predators, and then he fights X, and he fights Sever, and he fights Kramer and Kramer as well. I don't know how that works. We need to figure that one out. And then he fights monsters, and he fights aliens, and then finally he fights Freddy and Jason.
I'm buttering.
That's incredible.
I'm buttering.
Is that bigger than Avengers Infinity War?
It's called – I know the title is a little long, but we got an abbreviation for the fan community. It's called – SPVWVBVSVAVPVEVSVKVKVMVAVFVJ. So, I mean, that kind of rolls off the tongue. So I think we're good.
Yeah. Is that the Monsters versus Aliens with Reese Witherspoon and Seth Rogen and Hugh Laurie and all them?
Yes, I think so. What's the one with Daniel Craig? Yeah, that's Cowboys. You know what? We'll work the Cowboys in the sequel. We'll add a VC on there.
Wow. Okay. So I have to pick my two favorites.
Can I include two that didn't make the cut real quick? I had Apollo 12 Angry Men, which it's basically like a trial in a spaceship that eventually goes to the moon. And then I also had Beverly Hills Cop Dog.
Ooh.
I love that last one.
My favorite failed Trill Bones mashup is still Jason Jarambe, though.
I like it was some so oh Ma- Matthew LeBronahay.
failed Trill Bones brands. That's a whole separate podcast on its own. All right, my two picks. I'm actually going to pick one from each of you. I'm not going to pander, but I those are my two favorite. I got to go with the Scott Pilgrim Ultimate Avengers movie because that just sounds too wild. But Ken Jack, the Pirates of the Caribbean Happy Madison mashup. You have the Happy Madison cinematic universe down to a science. It's impressive.
Yeah, they should really hire me on board and just pay me money to write fart movies. Please hire me. I'm available.
Next Thanksgiving. What do you do for a living, Ken Jack? I write fart movies.
I'm the head writer and creative director for Happy Madison. I get paid a lot of money.
So wait, I said I wouldn't bring up Star Wars, but Star Wars has their story group. Does Happy Madison have their fart group? Just a group of the best fart geniuses?
Ken Jack's a head writer for Happy Madison. And he's also the guy that carries the backpack around that has Kevin James's underwear in it.
right, so our listeners and followers on Twitter, they sent us theirs. I'm going to give it off, each of these. I'm going to read them off. You need a quick plot summary. I'm going to go one by one, so I'm going to alternate who gets the movie. And you got to think of them really quickly. From okay. at PC Clark 1, Dumb and Dumber and Step Brothers.
Dumb and Dumber and Step Brothers. Okay, so it turns out the two guys in Dumb and Dumber, I don't know Dumb and Dumber canon too well, so stop me if I'm going overboards. It turns out the Dumb and Dumber people are actually brothers. Are they actually brothers?
No.
Okay, so it turns out they're
fucking moron.
So it turns out they actually are brothers. And then their mom marries into a polygamous relationship with this stepbrother's person's mom. And they all move into one big room. And just, you know, escapades abound and a lot of really funny stuff goes down in there.
That's good.
Bunk beds.
That's good. You somehow made Dumb and Dumber and Step Brothers into a movie about polygamy. That's, you know, impressive enough. Trill.
It's an advertisement for polygamy, actually.
Trill. This one is from @guy_pan. I think it's I may be saying that wrong. Ninja Turtles and Uncle Buck.
Master Splinter dies. And they have no one to adopt them except for Uncle Buck, who's been cast out. So Uncle Buck moves in with the Ninja Turtles under the sewer. And the turtles, instead of fighting crime, learn to smoke cigars and gamble and just become absolute worthless pieces of shit.
How does he get into the sewer? He can't fit in the manhole.
Show some respect to the dead.
Wait, speaking of sewers, a little callback to Jumanji. Did anyone notice that the nerdy kid Spencer shows up to that really old, rickety, rundown, scary house in a yellow coat? Was that an It reference?
Kind of looked like it.
I don't know, man.
I didn't think that. Extra.
Let's ask. Let's have our followers like respectfully at Dwayne Johnson and ask them that question until he answers. Don't harass him. Just be respectful. Just at him. Don't put a period in front of it. Don't include anyone else. Just be like, was that an It reference in Jumanji?
Yeah, don't include us. Don't include us. Well, no, you can include @LightsCameraPod. That's it. But don't include our individual handles. The only time we've weaponized our listeners was today when people finally started begging again for Spotify, which we want to be on Spotify. But I just tweeted it out from LCP like, hey, let Spotify know. Like, come on. You got to let us on there. All right. Ken Jack, back to you. Dunkirk and Up. This comes from @hot_takes_boss. BOS. Probably Boston. I don't know. Dunkirk and Up.
Okay. So it turns out old bitch boy McGee decides to join the war effort. And he gets in his big house and he loads up a hydrogen bomb onto his floating house. And flies it over the English Channel. And he just drops it onto Dunkirk, obliterating the entire city. And he becomes a pariah of England. Everyone doesn't know if they hate the old bitch from Up because he ended the war early or if they like him because he ended the war early. But at the cost of how many civilians? Who's to say?
Can I offer my plot in there real quick?
Yes, yeah. Please do. Okay. I was struggling.
So the guy from Up, this is an alternate timeline, as a young man joins the war effort and unceremoniously perishes. And the kid from Up doesn't have a role model and ends up just living an unfulfilling life. It's a real downer of a movie.
I love it.
I also like the idea that you just see the old man in the house and then the story converges like it does in Dunkirk and you realize he's really saving the day.
Yeah, I like it. And I just like the idea of him dropping an atomic bomb by hand off like his floating house onto a city of civilians.
Tom Hardy is like running out of gas over the water. Yeah. He's like, what the fuck is that? And he just runs into the house and the whole operation. The whole operation is just a gigantic failure, and Winston Churchill gets demoted. I don't think that's how late the country works, but you know, we're going into it here.
Trill from @thatmoviefox, any Wes Anderson movie in Transformers?
Ooh,
so Megatron gets a vinyl player and starts playing vinyl records, and. He starts playing music and he just listens to vinyl records for the entire movie. And he takes pictures with a Polaroid and he posts the Polaroids up everywhere. And you can kind of just see his life through the Polaroids. And he's somewhat dissatisfied. And you get a sense of that through his musical selections, but you never really know for sure because he doesn't outwardly say it. And the movie ends with no real resolution of anything.
I love it. The Royal Megatrons.
The Royal Megatrons. That's good. That's good. All right. Ken Jack from at burner account 69420.
wait. I will say, I wish the next Jumanji would take place in a more like modern universe. So like one of the characters can be Jumanji guy 69.
Yeah. 420 Ken Jack, burner god. Sorry.
Triple X and Garden State.
Triple X and Garden State. Okay, so basically, Xander Cage is driving down the New Jersey Turnpike, and he comes across Zach Braff, whose car is broken down on the side of the road. He pulls out his Colt 45 and shoots him in the face. The credits roll. Everyone stands up and applauds because it was such a happy moment in cinematic history.
Oh, geez. Trill, back to you. This comes from our buddy Donnie at Donnie Does World, Prometheus and Interstellar.
Matthew McConaughey is lost in space and he ends up crashing on the engineer's world. And he notices that the engineers like him are also frequently shirtless. And he ends up just chilling there and playing the bongos with the engineers.
Just smoking weed, just hanging out.
Yeah.
Ken Jack, this comes from at Kibron 11, Deuce Bigelow and the Godfather.
Oh God, this is gonna be a tough one.
That's a tough one.
Okay, so they're at the scene where Luca Brasi goes to the detente and with the revival Italian crime family, and then the guy goes to choke him with the wire, and then somebody just yells out, "That's a huge bitch," and then he dies. And then it moves on to, I don't know. I'm moving on from it. That's the only thing. That's the only line I got out of that.
Not bad. You gave it a try. That was a really tough one. Trill, your last one. This comes from our buddy Jimmy D'Onofrio, Night at the Museum and National Treasure.
So Nick Cage's character from National Treasure smokes a lot of weed and watches every Owen Wilson movie in existence. And he resolves to break in the Smithsonian to steal the tiny miniature Owen Wilson character.
Well, Ken Jack, I'm going to give you one more because you talked about this movie in our group chat. This is from at Christo Dowd, Toy Story and Small Soldiers.
All right. So in an alternate universe, Andy's parents buy him the Commando Elite action figures. He takes them out to assemble them and he leaves them in his room and goes off to school. And the regular toys go over to say hi to them and introduce them to Andy's room. Woody goes to shake Kip Killigan's hand, and Kip Killigan rips it out of his socket. And a slaughter ensues in which all of Andy's toys are killed and replaced by the Commando Elite action toys. There is no whatever. I forgot what the good guys' toys were in this, but there it is. Gorgonites. Yeah, no Gorgonites. And or maybe we should make it where the Commando Elite are bought by Sid and then they become sentient and work for Sid.
Ooh, I would like
to destroy it.
They work for Sid, but it's Chip Hazard, by the way. I'm not going to make funny. That's a long time ago. Chip Hazard, Brick Bazooka, Nick Nitro. I love Small Soldiers. I want to do something about Small Soldiers one day on this pod.
We should, yeah.
They were fun, though. God, I love Small Soldiers. So that's that. That's our movie mashups. We hope that satisfies. We didn't get to a lot. We had so many, and we'll do another something like this in the future. Maybe we do something on our website. We write some things up. We got some like Mary Poppins and Batman, with a Batman with the Penguin. Step Up and Fast and the Furious, Hunger Games and Jingle All the Way, American Beauty and Home Alone, Space Jam and Air Bud, Shawshank Redemption and The Longest Yard, Heavyweights and Dodgeball being in the same Ben Stiller universe. There's some good ones. Also on our website, we're going to have our Golden Globes predictions. We're going to do a little write-up on who should win, who will win, so you can find those on Sunday. You'll find all of our Golden Globes predictions. Next week, we are going to have our crossover episode with Listen to Brunch, the Brunch podcast. DJ Bean and Pete Blackburn, we're talking worst movies of 2017. We mentioned earlier in the pod which bad movies you should see, but try to watch all the worst ones from the year if you haven't seen them. Focus on The Bye-Bye Man as one of them, by the way. Leatherface, another one. The Snowman. Because we're going to talk about the worst movies of the year, and then Ken Jack and Trill are going to face off against DJ and Pete in a bit of a movie newlywed game. So a little fun there, just a young gun with a quick fuse. It's going to be a good time. Guys, it's good to be back. It's been fun. I'm glad we finally got through The Greatest Showman. This was months in the making, this movie.
It's good to be back, guys. I went on a bit of a hiatus, both from Twitter and talking to everybody. Over the last 2 weeks, I needed to unplug, and it was really good. It's just unfortunate that break like coincides with like the busiest week of movies for the entire year. So next year we'll get an intern and they can watch all the movies for us and summarize.
If we do get an intern at some point, if we get picked up somewhere, we're going to make them see only shitty movies. Like they're not going to be allowed to go see good movies.
Yeah, I missed you guys. It was a lot of waiting over this break. I'm just like, I just need to go on fucking movie podcast to the rest of the big time movie boys and yell about cinema.
Absolutely. I listened to the clip episode Jeff produced and it was really funny. So thanks for doing that, Jeff, because we had absolutely nothing to do with that. We just like, I'm taking this time off, and Jeff's like, oh fuck.
Yeah, that's all Jeff. That was a lot of work too. I can tell you from experience, it's a really fucking hard job, and especially the amount of like how long our episodes run to usually. That was really hard. So hats off to Jeff. That was a fucking trial.
It was fun. It was a good little recap. And for people who haven't listened to all of our episodes, it's a good way for you to catch up. You know, catch up on the ones that you haven't listened to and get in on some of the stupid inside jokes we have. So thanks again. Appreciate it for everybody. We mentioned it a lot in the last couple podcasts, but without you guys, this is nothing. And we have some big things planned in 2018. Stay tuned. Nothing we can talk about yet, but stay tuned. So we do have some big things coming up and some big guests. We have one guest that I'm very excited to announce. We can hopefully announce it very soon. It's going to be a very anticipated podcast.
I don't think I know who it is. Like, it's so secret. Do I?
You know who it is.
I don't know who it is.
Well, when I tell you after this podcast over, you're going to be like, oh, duh.
Oh, yeah, probably.
Unless you've totally missed every time we've talked about it, but anyway, probably. So get excited for that one. It's not an actor or an actress or a director. It has nobody in movies. But if you look at the schedule and you really think hard about it, I think you can figure it out. But it'll be fun.
Max Manda.
Yeah. No. reminder, the Golden Globes are this Sunday. Again, look for our predictions on our website, lightscameramovies.com. For Trill Ballins and LCP Kenjack.
You fucking what, bro?
Do you know Trill's real name is Chad with seven A's?
Chad. All right, everybody. We will talk to you next week on Lights, Camera, Podcast. Young gun, just a young gun. 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 Young gun, young gun.